Dumelang Sanbonani, good day. Today we celebrate yet another woman who is in leadership, making change, and yes, challenging the stereotypes. Her name is Siyolise Rangwetsi. She's the current ATM, Deputy Secretary General of the Women's League. She's been very much active in the party. If you remember, she was part and parcel of the national campaigns during the recent elections. And she says politics is calling to her. She previously served in the finance sector, banking, corporate world. She's right here in studio to touch base on her journey and where she comes from. Siyolise Dumela, welcome on stage. How are you?
Hi, Bafana. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I look at your profile from finance, politics. Give us more of a background. Where are you from and how did the journey start?
Okay. So basically, I studied accounting. Mm-hmm. I'm from a small town called Burgersdorp in the Eastern Cape.
Mm-hmm.
So I finished university via a bursary that I got from one of the big banks.
Mm-hmm.
And then I then continued my career in finance as a management accountant. I've been an analyst. I've been a finance manager. I've worked for two big banks. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of politics, I mean, I've always been interested in terms of what's going on because it affects our daily lives, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always taken an interest in terms of how the politics or what direction they are taking.
Yes.
And basically where I became directly involved is when the ATM was formed.
Mm-hmm.
My church is one of the founding members of the political party.
Mm-hmm.
So I was already serving in the youth structures, mm-hmm. women structures. So when ATM came, it was a no-brainer for me that I wanted to be part of it because I'm very interested in changing directly the lives of people.
Yes.
I'm very interested in how people live. I'm very interested in being fair to all of us as South Africans because mm-hmm. South Africa belongs to all of us and we should be just and fair in terms of distribution of resources, etc.
Yes. Mm. If I can just jump into here, usually people, when they go into the corporate world, they tend to say, politics are for comrades, you know. I'm okay with my suit and ties and high heels. What inspired that part where you said, I'm going to be part of politics, I'm going to be part of the ground forces, I'm going to work with the people on the ground?
I think for me, it has always been deep down. I knew when I was in high school that I wanted to have an impact. You know, so I studied accounting. I got into finance because mm-hmm. I could say I was good at it,
mm-hmm.
but I still had something in me that said, I want to make the difference, you know, and for me being in finance was not enough.
Yes.
And for me, then when the opportunity came for me to be directly involved in politics, it was very easy for me because I was already serving at my church, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We had already projects where we were giving back to the community,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, just being in finance, I didn't want to be just one-dimensional. I don't think I've ever been a person that thought if you are in finance or in corporate, you have nothing to do with politics,
yes.
even though that is the common
understanding.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. If I can say, yeah.
You know, as of recent, for the past couple of years, we have heard of, women empowerment in our country. Women needs to be given spaces. Women needs to be also considered for leadership roles. Your thoughts so far? Have you done well? Here you are, a woman in a political party. There are some women that we see in the corporate world. Are we doing good or we can do better?
So definitely, I would say we are doing well.
Mm-hmm.
We are headed the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot that we need to do.
Yes.
You know, in terms of empowering and encouraging women to be part of leadership positions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just having setting the environment up for women, because women have different challenges or different expectations. If you were to look at society, for example, I need to be a mother, I need to be a wife, I need to do all these things, yet I still want to progress in corporate, in politics, you know. So we find ourselves having to work very, very hard, you know.
Yes.
We need to do extra to, number one, be noticed, to say, okay, yeah, that one looks like. And yet all these other expectations are there, you know.
Yes, yes.
So definitely we need to do better in terms of setting up the environment. But if I were to talk about me, myself, I've definitely worked very hard to get to where I am. And hard work will always set you up.
True. But did it affect you? I mean, you're a married woman, a mother of two.
Yes.
You are in politics, you are ready. Does it any way affect how you take care of your house, or were you forced to now hire a maid or get a PA?
No, I'll be honest, Bafana, it does. And I think it does for every woman who is in a senior position.
Yes.
The first thing is that you need to acknowledge that you're not going to be everything.
Yes.
You know? And for me, what has worked was my support structure. My husband understands my vision very well. And so when we got married, for example, I was a career woman. I was working ridiculously long hours because I wanted to progress. Fortunately, he was able to understand that and was able to support me from that perspective. Yes, I do have a maid. I do have family that assists me when I'm not around to help with the kids and everything.
I think for some people they say, hey, man, I had to get a maid because, hey, man, Motona haduli montu. She's hardly home. She's in the meeting, she's on a flight, she's everywhere. And, you know, I think getting a maid is strategic, even though some women are like, hey, yeah, yeah,
I don't want a maid in my house. I would never be able to live without a maid. Like, there's so much to do.
But I'm going to come to this. And I loved what you said when you said you're an overachiever, you work hard, you set your mind into this thing in leadership role, and there's been this new thing of independent women, right? And most guys are like, hey, child, those ones, they can't be married, hey, they're too much, they're hardly home. You are married. What made it different with you that you are this woman who's educated, who has worked in the corporate world, you're in leadership role, but you still have a stable marriage? How do you manage that?
I think you need to get a partner that understands your goals.
Sure.
That's the first thing. And you need to be very clear going into the relationship to say, this is what I'm looking to do, you know. And it takes a lot of teamwork to do all of these things, you know.
Yes.
There's compromises that you will make, you know. But also from the other side, you would expect compromises as well. So I think for me, what has worked was the right person and the person who understood my drive, if I can put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where do you think most independent women get it wrong? Like yourself, why most of them? What do you think they get it wrong? Because usually it seems to be like, I have money, I have my own house, my own car. I don't need a man.
Well, it's a bit difficult to speak from that perspective, right?
Yes.
Because I have had to navigate as well.
Okay.
So the first thing, I was raised by a single woman, right? So I know women can do it for themselves.
Sure.
You get what I mean? So I have that within me.
Independent.
Yes. But now, I think when the relationship, when you communicate such things, when you understand each other's backgrounds, it becomes easier to say, because for me, it was very hard to let go and say, no, my husband can take care of me, you know, because I'm like,
you do it yourself.
Yes. But I think it took a lot of conversation and understanding and just the different compromises that we come with. For example, you need to have boundaries to say, no, this I have to do myself. It doesn't mean I'm not a submissive woman. And submission means different things to different people. So if your partner understands what submission is and is happy with that, then I think I
have a follow-up question. What is submission? Sorry, I consistently said it means different things. I have an idea that submission is more of you allow your man to lead, you allow your man to guide, you trust his vision for both of you. What would be submission for you?
So definitely the first things that you've said, to lead, to have a vision for the both of us. But I need to be part of that vision. You get what I mean? Like, there's decisions that I'm okay with him making, but decisions that I'm not okay with him making alone. You know when they say the woman is the neck? Because the head cannot move without the neck. So I sort of lead at my own level, if I can put it that way. So I am a leader in my own right, you know. But at home, I understand that he is the leader of our family. But when I get out of our home, I need to be a leader in my team, in corporate. I need to be a leader in the politics. You know what I mean? Yeah, so it submission doesn't mean I need to say yebo baba for everything, you know. But I also think it comes with, because they say, The woman needs to submit and the man needs to love and protect and everything. When you are loved and protected the right way, submission comes automatically.
I mean, I love the way you say things. It's a part where you say when you are loved the right way, when you're in your, which is, I think that's the truth. I think lately the idea of love and relationships, I'm worried as a man, for the future of even our boys and our girls. To say there has been a different approach where relationships don't last anymore. Marriages don't last anymore. Kids, these kids find themselves, not even kids, these ladies, young girls and boys, they find themselves in relationships where there's gender-based violence, where there's mental health issues, where there's drug abuse. And the question then becomes to say, most people would say, like, I remember a couple of years ago, my grandfather, when my grandfather said, you know, back in the day, we used to get married by the age of 30. I already had a family and wife. You are still clever, mostra thing, you know. And I said, it's a different time and age. It's a different time and age whereby you have different kind of man, you have different kind of woman. But then are you worried about the longer thing, the future of family in South Africa? What is your view on the future of families in South Africa? Do you think we are experiencing a decline?
So that's a tough topic, to be honest, because I'll start it by saying, because you have a change now in the dynamic, because women are looking to grow and become leaders, so then that means they are not the naturals that they used to be, or caregivers, primary caregivers that used to be, because now they need to be at work. They need to go longer hours. But I think we need to move with
the age.
Yes. We need to move with the age in such a way that as much as 20 years ago, the woman used to be 80% at home. Now I feel the father now needs to give some percentage back to say, let's meet each other halfway so that we still instill the family values that we want with our children. And I do think that maybe part of it is to say, I am busy progressing with my career and we are not really looking at how the kids are. We are just looking at the financial. Are they financially okay? Do they go to school? And we're not necessarily instilling values or grooming, you know? I do think we need to spend a lot of time doing that. And in saying that, I do think that, you know, the girl child. For example, my daughter will look up to me and say, I want to be like my mom, you know. We need to also make sure that the boy child is also groomed accordingly. So that in future you avoid the issues of feeling inferior from the male side, which can also lead to gender-based violence because this woman is so powerful, I can't deal with this, you know. So there's a lot of work that we need to do from a family value perspective. And I think how we need to do it is to say, let the fathers also play the role, so sort of meet each other halfway.
Because I won't lie, I've been to many homes where kids are playing on a tablet or they're just stuck in their room with a PlayStation.
Yeah.
And whenever they cry with your phone, you know, you know the child is in the house once the phone goes off.
Yes.
Mama, like, hey, I don't want to go into the room, right? And my worry has always been that because you have relegated that, responsibility to technology. And understand, we are working hard. People, you know, work long hours. Mothers and fathers are working, and now the kid has to in a way, you know, they're in charge of their upbringing. All you gotta do is give them money, buy them iPhones, let them look nice.
Yeah.
But in terms of, do you understand how they think? Do you understand their struggles? Do you know what kind of friends they have? Do you know what kind of fights they are into? And I think that neglection sometimes it becomes a time ticking bomb, because at the time when you are 20 or 19, is only then now you want to tell him, hey, you don't do that. But he started back then when she was 6 or 5, and you didn't even see it coming because he's like, I'm giving her money. She must be grateful and enjoy life and listen to me as a father. But here's the other problem that I've seen. Mental health issues amongst women, that drives them to alcohol abuse. That drives them to all of these things that have come, you know, as of recent. Do we need to have maybe social workers in clinics? Should we provide free counseling? Because there's a scourge right now of a lot of women jumping into drug abuse, alcohol abuse, even some are even smoking weed lately. So it becomes an issue of, do we need to provide them with emotional support or therapeutic or psychiatric support?
Yes, so definitely we do need the support. Hence, I think when we started, I did say we need to make the environment conducive for them. Because the truth is, it's a lot of new pressure, you know. And you would always, I've mentioned this before, you would always need to feel like you need to do more. Because you are competing with people who have traditionally been doing this, been in a leadership. Now you're navigating, being in a leadership. There's a lot of factors that come to it. You have to put in extra hours. You have imposter syndrome, that thing of, I'm a leader now. Am I really? And then, you know, then you have to, it's a lot of pressure.
Yes.
So I definitely think there should be counseling made available for women leaders, you know. I remember in the previous bank that I was at, there's something called ICAS. So it's like you can call them at any time, schedule them a counseling session, talk about anything. That's part of the support that you need. It's very crucial. And also, I think having support system from the environment that you are in. For example, if you are a leader in corporate, if you have maybe a mentor, other than your manager, yes, your manager is also your mentor. But like if you have a mentor that is higher up, who can help you navigate? It also helps if it's a woman, because they are facing most of the challenges that they have faced, you know. So it helps to have the I will always go back to the support structure from a perspective of, I have a mentor, but also the environment is conducive enough for me to say, I am feeling it now. I need to call ICAS. I need to schedule a therapy session so that I come back and I'm a better person.
True,
you know?
True.
And also that will also assist you to say when you need a break, because you can't function like this, like yeah. all the time.
I try. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but you're going to break, You do need to take the breaks and yes. get things that fill you up, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Like if you're a person who thinks, you know, I'm feeling anxious, what I normally do when I'm feeling anxious, I take a walk.
Wow, okay.
Or I go and I spend time with my kids. Mm-hmm. That fills my cup.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, yes.
Then I come back and I'm better, you know. Self-awareness is also a big thing as well, to say, now I can feel that I'm going to break. I need to take a minute and, you know. It's very, very important.
No, definitely. I'm going to come to this part. Teenage pregnancy that you've been seen in schools, in communities, we have seen also this thing of older men dating school girls or even college students, yeah. right? They even gave it a good name, ladies. They call it Slay Queens and Blessers. They call them Blessers, mm-hmm. and girls are called Slay Queens. How did we arrive here? Is it poverty? Is it maybe upbringing? How did we arrive here from your perspective?
So I definitely think poverty had a lot of role to play, mm-hmm. because, for example, let's take the university example. If you're in university and you come from a family that has nothing, mm-hmm. right? And number one, you need to progress. Let's say you don't have a bursary.
Yes.
And you are like, I need to progress with my studies. Mm-hmm. I need to pay rent. I need to eat.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's this thing available to say, mm-hmm. no, you just need to do it for like
once in a while.
Mm-hmm. You get your allowance, you know.
Ish, yeah.
What are the other options? What other options are there for that child, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So poverty has a lot to do. That's why I think government needs to do a lot when it comes to tertiary education and free education, mm-hmm. because then you won't find our girls put in such awkward positions to sell themselves, because that's essentially selling yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Because I've seen that, and even though they have nice ways to kind of frame them, but I tend to feel like, but guys, it doesn't feel right or doesn't look right that a girl will be dating a 45-year-old man and she's like on her 20s, just studying varsity, mm-hmm. only for the sake of money, only for the sake of access. Mm-hmm. And it breaks my heart. But I remember there was a time where ATM, I think you still stand by that, where you wanted to introduce a military training for young people to build discipline, because also I feel sometimes it's not even an issue of poverty, sometimes it's an issue of discipline and values, the principles, right? Do you still follow by that? Do you think maybe taking them to the military after high school, we would be able to build better, focused young people?
So definitely not everyone, mm-hmm. but we do believe that we should invest on our military capital,
yes.
because we don't really see them much now. Mm-hmm. We only saw them when there was COVID taking place.
Yes.
For example, there's a lot of crime taking place in the locations. Mm-hmm. Where are those soldiers, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So not necessarily for just discipline, because mm-hmm. you can't discipline everyone the same.
Yes, yes.
You know, mm-hmm. but definitely if you do invest on the military, then you're giving those people a discipline, education, mm-hmm. and a chance in life. You're taking them away from the streets. But basically, it's a whole value chain that we need to look at.
Yes.
You know, you go back to the family values to say, mm-hmm. if they were instilled enough, would these children be finding themselves in a place where they are forced to, or feel like they are forced, because no one is ever forced.
Yes,
but if at home I was taught to say, this is never an option, you know, so there is family values to it. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you are right to say, I think it's when somebody said, maybe it's the scourge of single parenting that we have. I mean, now you have baby daddies, baby mamas. I think it's more prevalent now than a couple of years ago. But we have seen somebody even made a joke about it to say relationship is only for two people. Once the third person comes in, it breaks apart, right? Once a child comes in, guapela.
Yes.
And it worries me because we are not really reversing the pains of the past, but we are literally now going, we are just going ahead or maybe making it worse than it was before. Do you think maybe this has something to do with the history of the Black nation as a people, that we were raised by a broken people, we became a broken nation, and we are also going to end up raising broken people? Do you think maybe there must be some sort of a healing project taking place to kind of rebuild and build what we call moral regeneration?
Yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking moral regeneration, which is one of the things that ATM really, really wants to put forward. Because rightfully so, we've been broken in so many instances.
Sure.
And even in the 30 years of democracy that we've had, I mean, we as a lot of us have been disappointed by the system.
True.
You know?
True.
So we need to do a lot of work in terms of the moral regeneration, building back Ubuntu into people. Because I think having a conscience helps a lot when it comes to decision making. It will be very difficult for me to, let's say, go and impregnate a girlfriend and just leave them if I have a conscience.
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
So now it goes back to the moral regeneration that we really, really need to invest on as a country. But we have a lot to do in terms of making sure the bread and butter issues are sorted. Because if I'm hungry, the last thing I want to think about is that I need to be a dignified man. Because
yes,
I'm hungry.
Yes.
How am I even dignified when I don't have anything to eat? I mean, how am I going to take care of that girlfriend and that child if I have no job?
Yes, yes.
You get what I mean? So it's a value chain of things, but we need to take care of the
bread and butter
issues first.
There's no dignity in poverty, as they
said. Exactly.
I'm going to go because you are a religious party, Yvonne had to say, and religion used to play quite a strong role. Because people used to think, God, what would God think about my actions? And I think most, as of recent, we are slowly but surely pushing religion away, and everybody does as they want. And I'm not sure whether that is the right approach to go, because in terms of when we had biblical values, when we had the fear of God, we had better communities. We treated each other better because with an idea that we are saving God and in return saving humanity.
Yeah.
But then with the current state of affairs right now in South Africa, do you still believe the church has a role to play, or do you think their time is up?
So their time is definitely not up in my view.
Yes.
I do believe that. So as I'll talk about the Black person specifically. So we grew up with a higher power in mind. Back then they used to say Kamata and whatever. Yes.
Yes.
So we've always been that nation, you know, and it gave us the thinking to say, if I'm doing this, how is God gonna view me? I'm disappointing God and all of that. So religion has a lot to do with who we've been as a people. And that then brings in the churches. I mean, there's other faiths as well, which I think has a huge role to play. And I do think they continue to. But let our government also be inclusive, because I don't think they have that much appetite in terms of the role that the churches or religion can play into making our society better.
That's, yes. I think as a young person, I have had engaged, and I'm a Christian, and I work a lot within the churches, And what I have seen, there is a good number of young people coming and serving and, you know, passionate about God and everything. But there was also a large majority as well that sees God as either the religion of the, which is the Bible, as the colonizer's book, who sees religion as the something of the past. Even traditionally, as in Africa, we would have amadlozi, and there would be certain things, where you had a certain laws and codes and code of conduct in Ubuntu that we lived by, but they are slowly being reduced to being those are outdated, those are stuff of the old people. And my question then sometimes worries me to say, as we want to build communities, as we want to build stronger women, and as we want to build stronger men, why is it that there is this? How did we arrive to a point where God is controversial, where morality is controversial, where I tell you something is wrong, already you jump to, don't judge me.
So back to my point of saying, I do think to a certain extent our laws or policies that are governing South Africa have not really embraced the role that is played by the religious fraternity.
Yes.
And that also includes the royal fraternity, by the way, because, for example, in the Eastern Cape, there are places where a king is in charge of their village, if I can put it that way. And discipline is instilled or was instilled back in the day by the king. You didn't have to take the child to the police. If they had sinned, there's a like a community.
Yes, there is that cluster.
Yes, that will discipline them. Correct.
Yes.
So I do think governance and our government needs to put these parties into the running of the country because they bring back that conscious. They play a pivotal role in terms of, so now when a government is like, it's up to you, we don't need a view from the churches, we don't need a view from Amakosi, then kids are bound to just be like, don't judge me, it's my life.
It's more like you're on autopilot. You just move as you go.
There's no campus.
One thing we have seen, my sister, gender-based violence. Some say it needs to be stopped. Women need to be empowered. Maybe be given self-defense courses. Some say some women use this gender-based violence either to trap men, to abuse men. And the question then becomes, what is at the core of this? Is it anger? Is it unhealed wounds? Is it, what would you say from your perspective as a woman? Because usually people would be dating for 10 years. Then jiki tabo tunse musadi. Like, but chief no katam sadi yao. Or it can be other way. You know, a woman was in 20 years marriage. And within 20 years, the woman stabbed a man to death. And yes, it's gender-based violence, but we're not speaking about the roots of it. And that's what I'm concerned about. What do you think might be the roots of this scourge in our nation?
Yeah. So I think one of the things that I have seen is that in most of those cases, you would see a happy couple most of the time, right? And you would not know about what is going on behind closed doors. So for me, that speaks to the sense of society to say, do I even have someone to talk to? Because it wouldn't have to get to that extreme where I feel like the only way is to shoot my wife for doing that, you know? Yes, there's a lot of unhealed issues. There's a lot of, I spoke about it now, of now women are emerging to be leaders. That also plays a role to say, now Musadi O has some born organics because they are a leader. You know? But I do think a sense of community would assist us a lot when I know it's safe for me to talk to my neighbor who is my brother. My sister who is my front opposite neighbor, you know. because a lot of that can be solved by just talking. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. now when someone feels like, it's like depression, when someone feels like, I can't talk to anyone, and they end up killing themselves.
Alone. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So yes, there's a lot of past traumas that we've encountered. Mm-hmm. And I do think also the family life, the change in that dynamics, mm-hmm. I think I've mentioned this as well.
Yes.
Have not been embraced the way they should. Like, no one has told a man how to deal with a woman that has now more opportunities than him when he previously was the caregiver or the breadwinner.
Yes.
So all of those have an impact.
It becomes a power struggle now.
Power struggle.
To say, who is in charge, right?
Exactly.
She's making more money than me, or she's busy. She does this more than me. She's hardly home. Mm. But then does it cut to faithfulness in the relationships? Because what I hear a lot, it's either the wife cheated and the wife got angry and say, "Jawtwela, sala jual," right? Mm. And it goes to even to men, where I'm sorry, a woman has left the man for another man. Is it also the issue of faithfulness and loyalty in relationships?
Mm. So I like taking another angle about thinking about things or talking about things. So you also have. So I spoke about the gender equality one. But then you also have a dynamic now where, let's say, husband hasn't been working for a long time and the woman has seen that, because naturally the husband has to be the caregiver, has to be the provider. Now he's not able to do that. And the wife sees somewhere else, Baibo. Someone here is able to do this, you know. It also then goes back to where we are economy-wise. What is our government doing to make sure that there's job creation instead of giving me 350 because I'm unemployed? Can you give me a job so that I can be able to be a provider in my home, you know? So there's a lot of dynamic that comes in.
Yes.
With that. And it will, like, the byproducts of it will be, there will be cheating, there will be someone finding something better elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that wouldn't be the case.
But money is the engine.
Especially when there's poverty at hand, you know. There's the thing of being greedy, to say, I'm already taken care of, I just want more, I'm greedy. But then there's the thing of, my kids are going to bed hungry. I need to go girls up.
Yes. Sadly.
You get.
Sadly. I get you. Because I think the case that you have seen a lot, which one of them was one of the two radio broadcasters, I won't mention their names, where a woman at some point accused them of rape. And she also alleged to say there was GBV aligned to it, which to some extent, most people now, when somebody says GBV, they end up going like, oh, wait a minute, we want to hear the whole story. So slowly but surely, this struggle for women, it is slowly now being abused or either being, what's the word, reduced in a way to say, because before when a woman said GBV,
everyone would jump.
We believe you, we jump. Now it's an issue of what happened. Or how did it happen? Really? Is it really happened? Are you trying to get something out of it? And there is something also whereby most men today are in jail because of rape allegations that maybe a woman wanted money, like that thing of Pretoria. I don't know if it's happening across the country. What do you call it? Mavoso. I think it's Mavoso. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And most guys say you pick up a girl in a club, and tomorrow morning, what are 2.5? Like 2,500 rand. I'm like, I don't have that money. Like, okay, it's either you pay me or I'm reporting rape. And to those women who may be doing such things, what is your view?
it's a sad situation to see, you know. But now I'm gonna sound like a broken record.
Go for it.
Let the government give people a chance to make a living for themselves so that we don't have to find people in situations where they go and look for work in something called Mavuso. Because at the end of the day, if you follow most, I would say, most of the stories of these children, I don't think they woke up one day and were like, I'm gonna go sell myself. I'm gonna get 2.5 from sleeping with a man. I don't think any girl grows up and says, I want to be that, you know.
True.
So let the government do right by the people.
Yes.
Children need to be given a chance to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to be given a chance to go and work and make an honest living for themselves.
Yes.
So that's my view. I can't judge those girls that go and get Mavuso because... Perhaps it's the only way they see.
There's gonna be another way, though, but yeah, I hear you.
I hear you.
I mean, I feel like there's gonna be another way, but yeah. I hear what you're saying. Some of them they're put in the corner.
But in the current, like, look at the current situation in South Africa. Like, it's very sad.
Where you have 60% of the youth unemployed.
Exactly.
And most of them are young boys and young men. And even older generation that are unemployed. And women are the ones who are the caregivers. And sadly, most women want the man who is financially stable. So you end up now having those guys competing. can't even get a girlfriend because he doesn't have the enough funds to take her to McDonald's or anything.
Yeah.
But my sister, before I just let you go, you are in leadership in ATM. You have been in leadership in the corporate world. The question would be, women in leadership, what would you say still needs to be done to ensure that hopefully one day we would have a woman president in this country?
So I think generally, I think women have done very, very well in the leadership positions, you know. I do think from a woman's perspective, I think we need to believe in ourselves enough.
Yes.
That's where it starts, to say, I can do this.
Yes.
Number two, go get the training that you need to get ahead. Number three, be willing to stay the course or have the, what do you call this?
The courage.
No, Landoyo.
Tetas is tet.
You need to be able to, nyamezela, what is it?
To endure.
Endure, yes. Mm-hmm. Because growth is not comfortable.
Yes.
You need to be able to withstand the difficult times and stay the course. Just because it gets difficult doesn't mean
it's impossible.
It's impossible, you know.
Mm.
And you need to take up the space because the space is there, right? But it won't be given to you just like this. So you need to push a little bit. Just push a little bit and be like, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that's what we have to do as women to be noticed. You can't be sitting in your corner and waiting for people to notice you.
Yes, you know.
Mm-hmm. So I do think that from a corporate perspective, we've gone a long way in terms of ensuring that we groom women leaders.
Yes.
But we have a long way to go because if you look at the statistics from a board member's perspective, we're sitting at about 35%, yet we have 41% women in corporate.
Yes.
So it tells you that there's still something that we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it will go back to creating the conducive environment because we're trying to make something that hasn't been there before. So we need to make the environment conducive as government institutions as well to make sure that we are setting our women up.
So, you know, when you look at this, the current elections, the recent ones that we had some women going into leadership positions, and one asked the question, how far are we from actually having a woman president in South Africa? How many elections are we from until we have a woman president in the union buildings commanding the forces of this country?
So, coming from a woman, we are ready.
I love it.
The next elections, we are actually ready to have a woman president. I'm a firm believer in women, in leadership without gender. And I do believe we have a lot of capable women that can be able to carry out that position. I mean, 30 years was more than enough for us to say we are ready for a woman president.
We have had women like Winnie Mandela. We have had women like Helen Suzman. We have had women like Ruth First and many others who were central and played key roles during the struggle and even towards what we have today as Democratic South Africa. Do you feel that we appreciate these women enough as a nation?
I think we do. I think we do. I think there's a lot of learnings that we do. I mean, in the different corners that I am in, I mean, the women's leagues that I've been exposed to, they take a lot of lessons from, they always refer to them as the strong women who have played a huge role in terms of making sure that we as women are where we are. So I do think we do take we do appreciate them a lot, and we take forward all the things that they have done, and we try and build from that and do more. Hence, I was saying, I do think we are ready for a woman president.
Hi, Womandla, as you guys say, Womandla. My sister, I'm going to let you go, but before I let you go, I will give you 2 minutes. The camera is right there on your eyes, and then just speak to women. It's your month. What is your message of inspiration to them, or motivation, or whatever's on your mind, on your heart? There you go.
Okay. Thank you very much. So I think women, as I've said before, we need to believe a lot on ourselves. We've got a lot to offer, and we've got a lot of the interpersonal skills that are needed in our country, in corporate, to actually make sure that those organizations go further. So we need to believe in ourselves, develop yourself, go through the motions, and make sure that you develop and learn as much as you can so that you can set yourself up. Take up the space. I've already said that. Take up the space. It's there for us to take. If you need to push a little, do that, but do it in a womanly way. You don't have to change who you are. You don't have to be masculine to actually be a leader. I think women are very capable of doing everything that they put their hand or their
minds
onto.
No.
Thank you.
Yes, that's Siyolisi Rangwetsi, ATM Deputy Secretary General of the ATM's Women's League. And she said it better. You can do it. You can rise up. The space is open. And to all the women out there, we still celebrate you. Happy Women's Month. See you next time as we celebrate another woman doing great things for South Africa in leadership, changing lives. Other than that, this was proudly brought to you by Podcast Party, where great minds don't think.